The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Good afternoon. Get ready for Leadership Leverage with Dr. Robert Denker. No matter what role you play in leadership of your organization or business, you are sure to get helpful secrets that will improve that role. Now here's your host, Dr. Robert Denker.
Hello, good day, and welcome to Leadership Leverage. I'm your host, Dr. Robert Denker, and today on Leadership Leverage, we'll be exploring the topic of creating meaning in the workplace. To help us navigate this journey today, our guests have the experience and knowledge to help all of us take practical steps, not only to help ourselves, but those that follow us to find meaning at work. I'm referring to the popular and distinguished Dr. Wendy and David Ulrich, who believe the soft skills are really the hard skills leaders must embrace to attract and retain top talent in their organizations. In their new book, The Why of Work, How Great Leaders Build Abundant Organizations That Win, they both challenge and show leaders how to make this happen. Dr. Wendy Ulrich has been a practicing psychologist for over 20 years and is the founder of 16 Stone Center for Growth, which offers seminars and retreats on creating abundance and meaning. She has authored two books on personal change. Dr. Dave Ulrich is a professor of business at the University of Michigan and co-founder of the RBL Group, a global professional services firm committed to creating value through the effective management of people and organizations. He has written over 23 books that cover the topics of leadership, human resources, and organizations. Wendy and Dave, welcome to Leadership Leverage.
Thank you, Rob. We're delighted to be here.
Yeah, and I'm delighted to have both of you here, too. And, you know, I have to ask that collectively now, both of you have written over 25 books. This, I think, is the first one that you've collaborated on, and I wonder what brought you to that point. I mean, was there a particular trigger in your situation that said to both of you, hey, we need to rally around this aspect of writing about the why of work and finding meaning in the workplace?
Rob, let me start with that. It's Dave, and it's wonderful to speak with you. We actually have collaborated on many things. We have three children and a house and a,
yeah,
a lifestyle, so I guess collaboration is not new after 35 years. We are meaning junkies. We like to look around and say it's not just what we do, it's why we do it. And in my work in business, I've always looked at what do you do inside a company that helps them succeed or create meaning for those outside. So.
Right.
Are we helping customers or investors by what we do? Wendy's a psychologist who helps people find meaning. We also share a faith and spent 3 years running a mission for a church and had the privilege of living in Canada where our whole focus was on meaning. At the end of that, it started to hit us that work is one of those critical places where people can, in fact, spend a lot of time. Somebody said the other day, 50% of our waking hours and probably as much of our thinking hours. Are we helping people in those settings find a sense of purpose and meaning? And the magic is that when we do, not only do they find personal meaning, but the success at work goes way up, that it's a benefit for many stakeholders.
So both sides win is really what you're saying, right?
It's one of those very seldom places where there's a win-win.
Yeah. Interesting. And Dave, you know, you in some recent presentations that you've been giving around the country, you've been addressing audiences with a metaphor that the talent or the new talent metaphor is the Marshall Plan. Can you expand on that for us?
You bet, and it ties into the sense of meaning. In 1999-2000, a phenomenally good study came out called The War for Talent by Ed Michaels and the McKinsey Group.
Oh, sure.
And the theory was, I win, you lose, and there's a war, there's a scarce resource. Well, it started to hit us that out of this last recession and other settings, we need a different metaphor. And so I started thinking about history, and I'm not a great historian, but at the end of World War One, there was a treaty signed called the Versailles Treaty.
Okay.
In that treaty, there was a winner, and the Allies punished the losers, and they said, you lost, and we are going to have reparations against you. Well, that led to World War II, and I started thinking, there has to be a better way than a war for winning the talent game. Well, out of World War II came this fascinating plan called the Marshall Plan, which is literally one of the breaks in history of military warfare. We will treat our enemies who we defeated as our friends. We will reinvest, literally in current dollars, billions of dollars to rebuild Europe in a collaborative way. Well, how do we do that with talent? How do we make it a win-win? Not I win, you lose, but how do we make talent a win-win as we go forward? And that's what the Marshall Plan metaphor seems to do.
And it's an interesting metaphor. I mean, in particular, given the current economic conditions, which seem to me to be different than, let's say, previous recessions. You have some thoughts there?
Yeah, let me take a shot at that as well. It's the new normal. We know we're going to be global. We know we're going to have competition. We know the cost is going to continue to be an issue. The fear in this recession is during the recession, actually, some of the engagement scores in companies went up, which makes no sense. Mm-hmm. We've cut your salary, we've cut
right.
your career. Why would they go up? And what people found was there was a survivor syndrome and an attitude of gratitude.
Yeah,
the fear now is we slowly come out of this recession and find a new normal. And it's not a V. It's going to be a long L or a U as we slowly recover. How do we use this Marshall Plan metaphor to retain our best talent? Mm-hmm. Lots of companies I'm with right now are saying, I'm really scared of losing good people.
Oh, yeah.
Here's the premise. When those people find meaning at work, they stay. They stay. If they were treated inappropriately in a recession and the company took an excuse to punish them or take away or not treat them with dignity, they leave.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we want to begin to discover.
Yeah, and I think a lot of organizations, a lot of leaders are indeed afraid of that fact that when the economy seems to pick up, the perception or the real fact thereof, that some of their top talent is indeed going to walk out the door.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm. Well, Wendy, one of the interesting things I think about this particular recession is some of the added stress that it's put on folks in terms of, as Dave talked about, stress at work, I just said at home, financial stress and such that people are facing. People are those that have jobs are doing the jobs, not just of the job that they're assigned to, but jobs of two or three other people in their department. And I found it interesting because in the one of the opening chapters of your book, you wrote about a woman whose name is Vicky, who was living in really the same scenario that I've just outlined. So I wonder if you could tell us a little bit more about Vicky's story and what some of the coping skills are that you use to help your clients in trying to navigate what's happening in the workplace today, given the economy.
Well, I appreciate the question, Rob. I have to admit I had to go back and remember who Vicky was because we put new names on all of these people.
Sure.
But Vicky is actually a personal acquaintance with a different name who graduates from college and gets a great job with a great firm, really one of those top firms that anybody would want to work for. And a firm with good employee engagement scores and that sort of thing, a firm known for you know, really treating their people well and getting the best out of them. But pretty soon, with the downturn in the economy, things started to look pretty bleak, even at this very good company. And
mm-hmm.
people were scrambling to hold on to their jobs. There were layoffs, the first round of layoffs. You know, people are sort of sighing with relief because they realized that a lot of the people who went were sort of the low performers. But when the second round of layoffs comes along and even some of the good people are being given the out, it becomes a little scary for everybody. And, of course, the climate begins to be very tense as people are both stressed with what they're doing and afraid of what's coming next. And while I think we've perhaps gotten through the worst of some of that, I don't think it's over by any means, and I think we are still looking at a lot of people who are desperate for work, who are very stressed at their jobs because they have been stripped down in terms of employees to the point where everybody's working very, very hard.
Right.
So a couple of quick pointers that we can suggest to people under those circumstances. One of them is to simply face our fears head on, to realize that, yes, we might get laid off, or yes, we might have things turn out not the way we'd like in terms of the next promotion or the next job opportunity might not come our way, but to face the fear, to sit down and look at what's the worst case scenario here, what is it I am personally most afraid of, and it may not be, you know, the lack of a job. It may be something else about the lack of a job that's really personally scary for me. I'm afraid my wife will leave me if I don't have a job, or,
sure,
you know, whatever it might be. But to really face what is that worst-case scenario for me personally, and what would I do about it? And to continue to ask myself, what would be so bad about that? And then when I answer that question, then what would be so bad about that? Until I get to the bottom line. And sometimes when we really face those things head-on, they lose a little bit of their power for us. We realize we do have some options, even under our worst-case scenario. We do have support we could turn to. We do have backup plans. We do have agencies in place that would help us, and it helps to just face that, so we are not living in this constant state of dread that that we really haven't thought through. A second thing to realize, though, is that we do have serious demands on our lives, and when the demands and the resources are out of balance in our lives is usually when we're feeling just an enormous amount of stress, when the demands on our jobs, or the perception we have at least of those demands, way outstrips the resources that we have to meet them. To do that little analysis, what are the demands that are most difficult for me right now? Emotional demands, work-related demands, financial demands. It might even come to sort of spiritual demands, mm-hmm, in terms of who I think I am and what my life is about, physical demands. And then on the other side, to do a list of the resources that I have to work with those demands that help me, and to try to bring those things back into balance. Sometimes there are some aspects of those demands that we can decrease, some ways that maybe we don't have to do everything on that list to the degree that we think we have to. That's not always true, but sometimes it is. Maybe there's a way that we can rearrange our commute, or there's a way that we can get some more help from family members. And then to look at the resources. What are some ways that I bring up the resources? Are there any additional things that I can beg, borrow, or steal to increase the emotional reserves that I have, to bring up the people who are helping me, to add to my skill set, to bring those resources up to where they can meet those demands? And sometimes what it really boils down to is our perception of those demands and resources. Can I shift a little bit how I understand the demands of my job and the resources that are available to me, and shift my perceptions and what I'm telling myself, mm-hmm, so that I can get to a better place?
So it's really reframing is what you're talking about here.
Yeah.
We need to take a commercial break, and when we come back, I want to follow up with you on your answer, because it was really thought-provoking, and then go into what can leaders do for their employees during these times. We need to take a commercial break. You're listening to Leadership Leverage here on Voice America Business. Stay with us.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
Since the year 2000, RD and Partners have been helping client organizations across North America and Europe achieve breakthrough performance by providing practical solutions for talent identification, talent development, and improved team performance. Our services include executive coaching and onboarding, sales selection tools, validated to predict sales success, web-based pre-employment and development assessments for executive, managerial, supervisory and professional positions, talent reviews and team coaching, as well as competency modeling, including web-based custom 360 surveys. At RD and Partners, we don't arrive with ready-made solutions. Our service offerings have to fit the context of every aspect of your company, its markets, competitors, strategy, and culture. Please contact us today at rdpusa.com or by calling 888-600-7457. We look forward to helping you be successful by building and retaining your high-performance talent.
tired of the government squandering your tax dollars on bailouts and overpaid bureaucrats? On Free Markets with Dr. Mike Beitler, Mike Beitler and his guests explain why big government regulations are the problem and innovative businesses and free markets are the solution. Listen to Free Markets with Dr. Mike Beitler, Thursday mornings at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific, on the Voice America Business Network.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Leadership Leverage with your host, Dr. Robert Danker. If you have a question or comment about today's program for Dr. Danker or his guests, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or if you prefer, send an email to info@rdpusa.com. Now back to Leadership Leverage.
Welcome back to Leadership Leverage. I'm your host, Dr. Robert Danker, and we've been talking today on the very timely topic of how leaders can create meaning at work. Our guests today are Wendy and Dave Ulrich, authors of the book, The Why of Work, How Great Leaders Build Abundant Organizations That Win. Wendy, before break, we were talking about how people can cope, some ways that they can cope with the stress that they find both at work and at home and some of the financial stress that it brings. And you were giving some wonderful tips to our listeners on how to do that. I found in particular your comment of how to really face the fear. And in a sense, and these are my words, then run a movie of what that fear could possibly mean, what that might look like, and ways that you might deal with that fear. And then one of your other tips, too, that I found interesting was this whole issue of reframing the situation. Like, how bad could it really be? Can I look at this in another way? Are there some other resources that I can avail to myself in order to better cope with what's happening today?
Right.
Do you have any others?
You know, I do have one more, and it's a very, well, I have a lot more, but let me share one more that is a very simple thing. But sometimes when we just get going in such a frantic way at work, and it feels so pressured and so stressed, and we have this huge to-do list, you know, backed up in our brain, a very, very simple little tip is to fill in the blank. All I have to do right now is blank. And to remind ourselves to just take one thing at a time. All I can do right now is just the thing that's before me. And if I can fill in that blank of all I have to do right now is, you know, all I have to do right now is make this phone call. All I have to do right now is whatever, you know. It breaks down, it pulls off the pressure a little bit and says, okay, I don't have to think about this afternoon or tomorrow or next week right this minute unless the thing that's in the blank space is, all I have to do right now is think about this afternoon and plan my day, you know. Mm-hmm. But if we can just break that stuff down a little bit, it can take some of that pressure off.
Yeah, it does. It seems, in a sense, to be lightening. It takes that burden off, and I think it makes one say, I can take some action on this.
Exactly.
You know, I have to ask, because in my interactions with folks in the workplace, particularly during this current economy, there seems to be a lack of communication on the part of their leadership, particularly about what's happening in the organization. And we were talking about stress and meaning in the workplace. Clearly, I think this just elevates this whole issue of stress when people don't know what's going on, you know, when they don't know if they'll have a job next week. I mean, that really has a big impact on people. What are your comments to this?
Let me take a shot at that.
Yeah.
Somebody once said that people often swear in their native language, and we're not here to get you to swear and find out your native language. But when there is stress in the workplace, we go back to our predispositions and what comes natural. Lots of leaders in times of stress hunker down, and they limit the communications. They share less. It's the exact opposite of what we need to do. We need to be transparent. We need to share more. Steve Covey had a great line, change at the speed of trust. If
right.
There's trust between the employees and the leaders, the speed of change will respond and we'll be more successful. Well, that trust is based on transparency and openness. And if a leader knows what's going to happen, they should explain it. If they don't, they should explain it. Employees should never be surprised by their performance appraisal, nor should they be surprised by the business realities. And the headline that I really like is, when employees understand the why, they accept the what. And yet leaders focus 80% of their communications on what, not why.
They do, don't they? Right.
Yeah.
One of the things that's interesting in some of the work by David Rock and others on the neuropsychology of some of this stuff is that when people are uncertain, when we are dealing with threat and uncertainty, it actually diminishes the capacity of the brain to think well and to respond well. We get more tired, we get more confused and exhausted when we are feeling threatened by uncertainty, and uncertainty is a huge factor in the world today. But if we feel like people are at least being honest with us about as much as they do know, it helps the brain kind of quiet down and calm down where people can function again and can work again.
Yeah, what you're really saying is it wears them out.
It does. And this is not just, you know, mamby-pamby stuff. This is literally, it takes more effort for the brain to function when it's dealing with threat and uncertainty at the same time. So much of the brain's energy has to go with just dealing with the threat. There isn't a lot of energy in the brain left over for creative problem solving in those circumstances.
Yeah, how interesting, isn't it? Very interesting. You know, in your book, you both of you challenge leaders with the following question that I found interesting. The question is, before you ask what my employees put into their work, ask yourself, what do they get out of it? Why should leaders be asking that question? Why is that important?
Well, frankly, Rob, because we want our companies and organizations to succeed. And if they are going to be successful, the best way to, well, maybe not the best, but one of the imperative ways that we can really increase the probability of that happening is if our employees are satisfied with the work that they're doing, if they're feeling a sense of meaning, if they are engaged and involved and bringing us their best effort. It's fascinating to me that some of the research that's been done on that, over a 10-year period, the best companies to work for, the companies that got that designation, have a 6.8 stock appreciation versus 1% for the average firm. So in very simple, you know, research that we've done, 61 hospitals in the United Kingdom had a 7% decline in their death rate of their patients when they invested in the well-being of their staff. A lot of the research suggests that the numbers that we care about, our stock appreciation, our ability to give value to our customers, increases when our employees are engaged, when they're involved, when they're finding meaning in what they do, when all of their brain power isn't going to dealing with threat and discouragement and fear.
Wendy or Dave or both, how have you seen some organizational leaders go about this, though, in practical ways to find out what your employees want to get out of their job? I mean, is it more than just the traditional, you know, employee surveys that have been around for so many years?
It's a great question. The first one is to help leaders recognize, and Wendy used the word, there's a great commercial of the military person doing therapy, and he says, don't be mamby-pamby.
Oh, that's right.
And it's a line that I know you've used, Rob, and we took it from you. It's and so the first thing is to go to a leader and say, what is it that matters most to you? And a good leader is going to say, I want profit. I want earnings. I want performance.
Right.
I want market value. I want to increase my stock price. And to say to him, would you like to look at alternative ways to get there? Because one way you can get there is command and control, somewhat autocratic, hunker down, and that may work for you. We have another option. And Wendy just shared some of the data. If you do these things, the evidence is your employees who are committed and competent and find meaning will create customers with the same competence, commitment, and meaning. It will create investors who have more confidence, and money will go up. Then your question becomes so critical. So what does a leader do?
Right.
In our work, we decided that's a tricky question. Let's go look at good leaders, and we looked at leaders who did this well. Let's go look at the research, and we looked at seven areas where people have found leaders who create meaning. And when we looked in those areas, we identified seven things, and let me just hit one or two. And if I were coaching a leader, I'd say, are you helping your employees build on their strengths that shapes their identity? Now, they'd look at me and say, what is that? And I'd say, look at a job that's got to be done. We have a job in terms of serving a certain set of customers, in terms of becoming more global as we do work in India or in China or in Asia. I'd look at that and say, which employees are predisposed or have strengths that could do that? Which employees have a knack for serving customers? Which employees have a knack for going global and handling all the ambiguity? Which employees would find their identity as strengthened by doing those things? And to make sure that you match the employee with the set of strengths that they've got. And then we'd say to the leader, let us help you define what the business requires. What is it customers want you to be good at doing? At Apple, and Google, they want you to be great at innovation. At Marriott, it's great service. At Walmart, it's managing costs.
That's right.
How do you get your employees who have those strengths to be in jobs where they can demonstrate them? I'll give an example. I'd mention Nordstrom or Disney, who's dedicated to service. Wendy and those I work with sometimes remind me I'm not always the kindest person, and I'm not always patient with bad service. I might not be a good Nordstrom employee who, when someone comes in and says, oh, I love this shoe, and it doesn't fit, but it looks good, I would say, ma'am, with all respect, or sir, with all respect, the shoe doesn't fit. Don't buy it. Whereas a good Nordstrom employee would say, oh, you have such good taste. You have marvelous taste. Let's make sure that this shoe will serve you well. I would tend to be more blunt. I would probably not be a great Disney employee. If I'm in a Disney mask in Mickey Mouse or in mask and somebody comes up and grabs my nose, I'd probably be tempted to just say to that kid, what's the matter with you? And the parents would say, Mickey yelled at my kid.
Oh, no.
I would not be a good Disney or Nordstrom employee, but I might be pretty good at going global. I love the innovation, the challenge of new assignments. A good leader would say, what's required by our customers, our markets, our conditions, and how do I help an employee match his or her strengths, their identity, what they're good at, with those conditions? And that would be one example.
And I think that's a good example to use, too. And I hope those that are in leadership roles are listening for those practical ways to do that. Unfortunately, you know, in my experience, I have not seen a lot of folks in leadership execute along those lines, but I certainly wish that more would. We need to take a commercial break. You're listening to Leadership Leverage here on Voice America Business. We'll be right back in about 2 minutes. Stay with us.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
Technology is intended to improve our lives and solve the world's problems, but technology in itself is a complex myriad of concepts, ideas, and security. How do we sort it all out? Tune in to Technology Today with host Ajay Gupta. The program will go inside the world of technology with innovators, engineers, CEOs, and government officials. Our topics will include green technology, healthcare technology, and cybersecurity. Listen every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Since the year 2000, RDN Partners have been helping client organizations across North America and Europe achieve breakthrough performance by providing practical solutions for talent identification, talent development, and improved team performance. Our services include executive coaching and onboarding, sales selection tools, validated to predict sales success, web-based pre-employment and development assessments for executive, managerial, supervisory and professional positions, talent reviews and team coaching, as well as competency modeling, including web-based custom 360 surveys. At RDN Partners, we don't arrive with ready-made solutions. Our service offerings have to fit the context of every aspect of your company, its markets, competitors, strategy, and culture. Please contact us today at rdpusa.com or by calling 888-600-7457. We look forward to helping you be successful by building and retaining your high-performance talent.
We're always talking business. Talk to an expert. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Leadership Leverage with your host, Dr. Robert Danker. If you have a question or comment about today's program for Dr. Danker or his guests, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or if you prefer, send an email to info@rdpusa.com. Now back to Leadership Leverage.
Welcome back to Leadership Leverage. I'm your host, Dr. Robert Danker, and we've been talking today on the very timely topic of how leaders can create meaning at work. Our guests today are Wendy and Dave Ulrich, authors of the book, The Why of Work, How Great Leaders Build Abundant Organizations That Win. David, Wendy, thank you for still remaining with us in this segment of the show. Abundance is a major theme of your book, and on one of the pages, there's a circle graph that looks to me like a flower. It has the abundant organization at the center, and it's surrounded by smaller circles. And in these circles, there's phrases like positive psychology, happiness and growth, learning, resilience. And I have to say that I think that some CEOs would be looking at that chart and thinking that this is a bunch of what I'll call mamby-pamby stuff. You know, they'd be maybe wondering, hey, where's the next graph here that has a circle for EBITDA, or one that says, or some type of a graphic that says we're going to blow the competition clear out of the water? How would you address them if they asked that question?
Let me start. I teach in the business school at Michigan, and I had an interview. Let me anchor this. When this book came out, and the interviewer on national television ran an investment bank, and he said, if I understand right your message, and he said it with great dignity, I can treat my employees and give them meaning, and they will work harder, and they will be more productive and make more money, and I, as the owner of the investment bank, will be richer so I can buy a bigger yacht.
Okay.
And I looked at him and said, I don't know how to respond. Gordon Gekko was on television, but it's a fake. You have a picture of Gordon Gekko in Wall Street on your wall, and you celebrate it. Now, in one way, he's got a point. The purpose of this has to lead to economic good. And the headline is really easy. Making meaning makes money. And if making meaning doesn't make money for the company, it's not sustainable. But Wendy shared some statistics, and almost all of us have the experience. Think of a time when, Rob, you were working or I was working, and you got into a zone. You just got into it, and you looked up and said, oh, my gosh, what happened?
Oh, sure.
I wish it happened more. For me, it may be in teaching, it may be in writing, or it may be in some other kind of work. Well, in that zone, you probably reached some peak productivity. And in that zone, you found excitement and enthusiasm in the work itself. Well, that's what we want to create in an organization. How does a leader intentionally create those moments of almost pure passion and productivity so that making that meaning does make money? What I love to do to a leader like this is say, do you want a bigger yacht? Do you want to be more profitable? Absolutely. I will show you a path. And if we can show you a path that does that in a different way than the way you've been leading today, would you be willing to change? And they always say yes. Then you come back and say, you're not going to be able to be as command and control. You're going to have to coach and communicate. You're going to have to find out what works for employees, not just what you tell them to do. You're going to have to listen. You're going to have to create purpose, work in teams, some items we'll talk about. And they say, well, those aren't things I like to do. Well, those are the things that will make you more money. And if you want that outcome, we can help you get there.
And that really gets back to your comment where soft becomes hard for line managers.
Absolutely.
Yeah, interesting. Very interesting. You know, before we went on to break, too, you were talking about questions that they ask, and or leaders should ask, about, you know, identity and purpose and direction and teamwork. And I found that an interesting chart, too, in your book, where it's really an assessment for individuals to find out about abundance at work, and I think there were 7 questions in total, but I'm wondering, are there any particular questions that that are harder for leaders, or they struggle with more than others?
You know, I think it's a very individual thing, Rob. Different leaders have different strengths and different propensities, certainly. And one of our goals in writing this book was to give people a menu of choices. In with very few exceptions, you know, when you walk into a restaurant, you don't try to eat everything on the menu.
Yeah, right.
Well, sometimes I might, but for the most part, we're looking at a range of things, and we try to pick from those the things that interest us, the things that sort of seem like they're relevant for where we are right now. And we've tried to not give a sort of one-size-fits-all approach to this, but to say, look over this list. You look at the ways that these apply in your personal life. Look at the ways these might apply in your team or for your company as a whole, and to give people a series of choices of things that they may be doing some of very, very well, and others might be thought-provoking in terms of areas for growth or improvement. We came up with 7, and one of the things we did was to simply look at all of the ways that people told us that they found abundance or meaning in their lives and in their work, and to try to group those into categories that would be easy for people to sort of work with and identify with. We found that a lot of people have not really had the opportunity in their work to build from their strengths, and that when people are doing work that builds on their strengths, of course they're going to be happier, they're going to have a more of a sense of well-being, and the research points that out and strengthens that assumption. So trying to help people figure out what their identity is and what their strengths are that they bring to the workplace is a big starting point. Where are we trying to go? What are we trying to accomplish? What's the direction that we're heading? Hopefully our strategy is clear about that. But as we look at that question of what is our purpose, where are we headed, I think it's helpful to realize that even though we may have an overall goal, individuals on the team may need to use their strengths to bring to mind different parts of that goal that we may not be thinking of. Our overall goal may be to beat the competition and blow it out of the water.
Right.
But we need somebody who's paying attention to how are we getting along with each other, somebody who's paying attention to are we learning and are we thinking about the opportunities that are coming up ahead. Somebody needs to be paying attention to how are we being seen in the community, how well are we taking care of the resources of the community at large and the planet that we live on. So that sense of purpose can have an overall direction, but also individual people on our team may need to be paying attention to different parts of that sense of purpose that may not be as obvious in the first place. So we talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the big ones that that a lot of leaders aren't paying enough attention to is relationships. There's strong research to indicate that people who have good relationships at work, people who have a best friend at work, the Gallup folks tell us, are much more likely to be satisfied with their jobs, are much more likely to be engaged in what they're doing. And yet I don't know a whole lot of executives who are sitting around thinking about, now, does so-and-so have a best friend at work?
Right.
Now, what are the social relationship skills that we should
yeah.
be making sure people have? Do people not really, are they good at solving conflicts? Are they better, able to deepen relationships? You know, do people feel good about each other? Are we investing in that? Are we training for that? Are we
mm-hmm.
making resources available to help people with that? So that's one that I think is interesting to think about in our own lives. Do I have a close friend at work? And do the people who are working for me, who are important to me, have close friends at work? The people who are at the bottom of the organization, who are getting paid the least, this becomes the most important for. They are most likely to stay and be happy with their pay, be happy with their jobs, if they have a close friend at work.
Mm.
And without that, they don't have a whole lot else sometimes that's keeping them on the job, that's keeping it a happy place for them.
Well, that's an interesting point, because when I read through the list of questions, you know, some of them made sense to me, like, okay, I could do this, like identity. What am I known for? That kind of gets back to your professional or individual brand. You know, purpose and direction, where am I going? That's your vision. What do you want to accomplish here in the organization? But when I got to the teamwork, and the question is, whom do I travel with? I thought, well, that really, oftentimes, that's not a choice I have.
True. And so we need to kind of expand the range on that a little bit. You know, am I, in taking the time to get to know the people I am sort of stuck with, I've found as a psychologist for many, many years, lots and lots of people walked into my door, people I had things in common with and people I had nothing in common with.
Sure.
And yet as I got to know their stories, as I listened to them, as I shared in their lives more deeply, I can honestly say with very, very few exceptions, and the exceptions were not people I worked with long term, I came to care about those people. I came to love them and respect them. As I got to know them, I began to form a connection with them, and I learned that when we take the time to invest in people, to get to know them a little better, we can make friends with people we wouldn't necessarily think are going to be our best buddies when we first meet them.
So it's really allowing yourself to be open to those experiences, too.
It is, and to make sure that our people have the skills with which to do that. Are we helping them work through conflicts? Are we helping them make bids? Are we helping them respond to the attention-getting sort of efforts that people are making around them to try to be connecting?
And so, again, you're finding that the research, particularly in the lower positions and organizations, meaning those that are paid less,
right?
It's really having a best friend, even more so than having a good boss.
Hopefully your boss is, you know, maybe not your best friend, but
right.
Somebody who has some of these skills as well. And I haven't really seen, you know, the research comparing those different things, but
sure.
We do know that the people who have a close friend at work, you know, the research does seem to indicate that those people are significantly, like 2 and 3 times more likely to say that they're satisfied with their pay, to be engaged.
Yeah, very interesting.
To recommend their company's products and services to other people.
Mm-hmm.
Those who are engaged are 78% of those people are likely to recommend their company's products, whereas only 13% of disengaged employees would recommend those products. So accident rates go down, absenteeism goes down, customer complaints go down when people simply have close friends at work.
And, of course, in you going through that list there of all the things that improve, in my head I was thinking dollars saved, dollars saved,
absolutely.
Dollars saved.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So this is not just a soft, fuzzy thing. This is how our companies become more effective and more efficient.
Yeah, very good. You know, we have to take another commercial break, and when we come back, I want to talk to you about the changing nature of work, because a lot of it is more and more folks are not in the workplace every day, and talk about how does a leader indeed go about creating meaning for a workforce, perhaps, that they're leading that's remote, that's not there. So let's take this commercial break. We'll be back in 2 minutes. You're listening to Leadership Leverage here on Voice America Business. Stay with us.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
Are you looking to soar with the eagles instead of being grounded with the turkeys? Why not have a gorilla help you out? Listen every week for Innovate, Leap Out of the Bowl with host Joby Dixon. Joby has made a living out of helping organizations and individuals become more creative, inventive, and innovative. The show closely parallels Joby's book of the same name. It'll include the process to innovate, how to rewire your brain for creativity, exercises, case studies, and more. Tune in to Innovate, Leap Out of the Bowl, Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on Voice America Business.
Since the year 2000, RDN Partners have been helping client organizations across North America and Europe achieve breakthrough performance by providing practical solutions for talent identification, talent development, and improved team performance. Our services include executive coaching and onboarding, sales selection tools, validated to predict sales success, web-based pre-employment and development assessments for executive, managerial, supervisory and professional positions, talent reviews and team coaching, as well as competency modeling, including web-based custom 360 surveys. At RDN Partners, we don't arrive with ready-made solutions. Our service offerings have to fit the context of every aspect of your company, its markets, competitors, strategy, and culture. Please contact us today at rdpusa.com or by calling 888-600-7457. We look forward to helping you be successful by building and retaining your high-performance talent.
Stocks, bonds, investment opportunities, financial news, and talk. We can help. Call us now toll-free, 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Leadership Leverage with your host, Dr. Robert Danker. If you have a question or comment about today's program for Dr. Danker or his guests, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or if you prefer, send an email to info@rdpusa.com. Now back to Leadership Leverage.
Welcome back to Leadership Leverage. I'm your host, Dr. Robert Danker, and we've been talking today on a very timely topic of how leaders can create meaning at work. Our guests today are Wendy and Dave Ulrich, authors of the book, The Why of Work, How Great Leaders Build Abundant Organizations That Win. Before we went on commercial break, I had posed a question that I'm particularly interested in, and that is that, I mean, clearly where work is done today is changing. I mean, for many people, it's no longer required that they come into the office every day of the week. So given that, how can a leader begin to create meaning for people who work remotely, that they manage, you know, in a virtual sense?
You know, one of the things that's interesting about the younger generation, and I'm old, so I call anybody under 40 probably the younger generation, but is that the facility that they have with the social networking and the technology, they are able to form relationships in a way that probably the older generation doesn't do quite as easily. But I think for many people, if they can have an occasional opportunity to get together, at least with other people on the team, and form those face-to-face relationships, that can really help. But to give people a little bit more flexibility to be a little bit more congenial, a little bit more friendly in their social networking kinds of experiences is one of the ways that people actually build positive relationships, even though they don't talk to each other on a daily basis, you know, in mm-hmm. person. I think the story also is really important. We talk about leaders as meaning makers, and that one of the essential functions of a leader is to help people understand the story. What is it we're trying to do? Why does it matter? What difference does it make? Mm. Worked with an organization recently that is a very, you know, hardcore bunch of technician engineer types who are building massive equipment, and, you know, that's kind of what they focus on.
Sure.
But it was when the CEO got around to sort of saying, you know, what we're trying to do is feed the world, and the equipment that we're building will make a difference in going forward into the future as to whether or not we're able to do that. That begins to become a story that grabs people's hearts, not just their bodies and their minds. To be able to see what we're doing matters. It makes a difference for my kids and my grandkids. It makes a difference for the larger world that I live in. Mm-hmm. To be able to create that story, that vision, that image is a big important part, I think, of what leaders can do to build meaning.
And again, that gets back to what you had said earlier, or Dave, I think, did. We talk more about the why than the what.
Absolutely.
In the story. You know, talk about why we're doing this, and then it becomes, and I would think CEOs would gravitate toward that. I would think they would go, okay, I can do that. Do you find that true?
Yes.
That makes sense to them, that they can
again,
talk
when,
about?
I think when, we think that when CEOs see the economic and market value of these ideas, they're willing to experiment with them and try to make them happen.
Okay.
And a great case, as Wendy said, is social networking. I think in the recent Golden Globe Awards, the social network show won the movie of the year.
Right.
That social network is something that the next generation depends on. We don't have to have face-to-face visibility in order to share our commitments and values to each other. In fact, if you want to do an experiment, take anyone probably today between 10 and 25. Take away their cell phone and their laptop for 2 days and watch them go into withdrawal. I teach sometimes a class at church to 16-year-olds, and they're all texting each other. I get tempted to say, come in, turn with your backs to each other. I will text message you the church lesson.
Oh, interesting.
Because they're very comfortable with those remote connections.
Sure.
We're going to see the same in companies. Almost any large organization today is global. They have 24-hour operations. And the old mindset is, we'll build it in America or in London or in Singapore and export it to the rest of the world. Today, we have to be very sensitive to the global world. One silly illustration is, when do we do conference calls? Well, let's do them at 1 o'clock U.S. time. Well, 1 o'clock U.S. time, depending on where you are in the U.S., is dinner time in Europe.
That's right.
It's middle of the night in Asia. And so the smart leaders are saying, we are a global company. We're going to play globally, and we'll rotate when we do calls.
Mm-hmm.
We'll move people around. We will literally build connections by values and meaning, not by face-to-face contact.
Interesting. Well, that and even, you know, the publication and recognition of national holidays outside of the United States. I remember one client was calling one of their subsidiaries in Canada to realize it was one of the Canadian national holidays and no one was there, but no one on the U.S. side even knew, you know.
One of the tests I love when I travel, especially in North America and sometimes in Europe, is to help people recognize that the next 11 emerging markets beyond Brazil, Russia, India, and China are things like Turkey and Iran and Egypt and Indonesia, and they've identified these 11. Seven of the 11 are predominantly Muslim countries.
Hmm.
And so I say to an audience, and I did that, in fact, recently on Saturday, how many of you know when Ramadan is? And most of us in the West don't think about it.
Wouldn't have a clue.
And yet Ramadan, in the places where we're going to do business in the future, will have an impact. And Ramadan is not a day, it's a month. And in that month, we need to be sensitive to the heritage that those cultures work in. That's where meaning becomes a global phenomena. One of the most fascinating things, Rob, is when we talk about meaning, and we've given talks in Europe, in Asia, Latin America, and in U.S. and North America, we actually find sometimes the responsiveness in Asia is better. Because in Asia, they say, organizations are not just designed to put in your time and make money. They're designed to be an extended part of your family. Now, the negative is sometimes they say that's a benevolent dictatorship. But we want to build this family or community within our organization. We know what meaning needs. And they sense that, and they're doing some of those things to make it happen. I was in a company in Singapore recently, and it's the company that runs the airport. And if anybody's ever traveled through the Singapore airport, you don't pay attention, but it is phenomenal. It's been rated the best airport in the world for 10 years in a row. And I finally met with the management team, and they pride themselves. This is the finding meaning in day-to-day things, in making that airport a great passenger experience.
Hmm.
For example, one quick example.
Sure.
And this is what leaders do. They just they have 1,300 employees, and they're passionate about making the customers, passengers, a good experience. They said, one of the big frustrations, and I hope I'm not crude here, toilets may not be clean. Well, we want a clean toilet. They said, we've learned that it's not hard to clean a toilet. That's not the difficulty. The problem is knowing when to clean it. And so we decided about a year ago that we would have an Apple iPad application for any passenger in the airport. We're going to put up little iPads. If you were at a toilet that wasn't clean for whatever reason, punch this button. And we now have a toilet SWAT team who will swoop down and clean the toilet. And they said, we have 500 pairs of toilets, men's and women. We have 1,000 toilets. We now will almost guarantee to a passenger that it will be never dirty twice. That if you came to a toilet and it was dirty and you hit this button, our team would be there within X amount of minutes, and we would clean the toilet. And they said, we now have employees excited. We're providing passengers a better experience by having clean toilets in the airport. Well, what a management team that's focused. They got 1,300 employees, the vast majority of whom are dedicated to making sure passengers have a good experience. You go through the Singapore airport, they have air conditioners in the jetway. so that when you get off the plane or you stand in line to get on a plane in a hot Singapore day,
sure,
it's air-conditioned. They have garbage receptacles almost within every few feet where you'd carry a piece of garbage. They have clocks. Almost every time you look up, you can see a clock. They have directions. They have literally said to their 1,300 employees, your meaning, your excitement about work is to make our passengers the best ever. Other final example. When they had a problem and when the ash was difficult in Europe and people couldn't fly,
right,
a lot of the airlines sent their passengers to Singapore because they felt they could distribute them better. They had a host of people with 50 different languages show up because the passengers were from multiple languages. And they said, every 15 minutes, we will talk to the passengers in their language and tell them what's happening. Passengers go, you got to be kidding me. This is an airport. This is an airport.
It's so different than what we're used to.
Oh, it's so different. You come into many airports in the rest of the world, and you go, it was kind of a crummy experience.
Right.
Well, and what they found is it makes money. The revenue per square foot of the retail shops in the Singapore airport are higher than Orchard Avenue, which is their Fifth Avenue in New York City. It's the Miracle Mile in Chicago.
Oh, that's right. It is, right.
And their airport makes more money per square meter than do those stores, than do the shops downtown. And it's not an accident.
No, it isn't.
What a fascinating case.
Well, it is, isn't it? And again, it gets back to those soft skills are hard for line managers to embrace, but when they do, there is a bottom line payoff to that. Now, Dave and Wendy, we've got roughly about 3 minutes, 2.5 minutes left of this show. So I'm wondering if there's anything that I haven't asked that you'd like to share with the audience about the book, about what maybe you've learned here from the work that you've done to put this the book together.
Let me respond to that, Rob. You know, one of the things, I'm a psychologist by training, and though I have an MBA, I have worked in the business sector for a long time, was just to realize what an opportunity it is for organizations in the world today to make a difference for good in the world. A lot of the CEOs running companies today maybe aren't thinking about this, but the younger generation coming up really are concerned about the world that we live in and about not doing harm in that world and making a difference for good. And it's interesting to me to realize what a positive impact organizations have. In many of the poorest countries of the world, it isn't churches, it isn't social organizations, it isn't charities, it isn't government agencies that are lifting people out of poverty. It's organizations, it's businesses that go in and give people a job and help people grow. People have certainly exploited those opportunities. But businesses have a great responsibility and a great opportunity to make a difference for good in the world.
Wow. Thank you so much for that. And I hope that those that are listening who are in leadership roles take heed of that, because you can make a difference globally. Dave and Wendy, I want to thank you again for being on Leadership Leverage today. For those of you that are interested in more about this topic, I encourage you to purchase their book, The Why of Work, by Dave Allrich and Wendy Allrich. Yeah, you also have a website for the book, I believe, that people can go to and learn more about and download some tools, I believe, right?
We do, thewhyofwork.com, thewhyofworknospaces.com.
Very good. All right. And again, thank you for being part of Leadership Leverage. And to all of our listeners, thank you for being part of the show. And until next time, I'm your host, Dr. Robert Denker, and the doctor is out.
Thank you again for tuning in to Leadership Leverage this afternoon. Please tune in again next Tuesday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern Time for another edition of Leadership Leverage with Dr. Robert Denker on the Voice America Business Channel.